Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Support for On Point with Tom Ashbrook and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage's completely online process lets you get a custom mortgage solution wherever and whenever you want. Check out Rocket Mortgage at quickenloans.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Actress Jamie Lee Curtis first came to fame as the scream queen of John Carpenter's Halloween and many more. Since then, she's been on screen for movies like True Lies and Perfect and Freaky Friday. She's spoken boldly and frankly about beauty and Hollywood, promoted yogurt, and become a pretty prolific children's author. She's out with another children's book, this one on an issue with a lot of currency these days, immigration and identity. And she's been in the thick of politics and more with her straight-talking way. This hour on Point, Jamie Lee Curtis. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. How do you talk to your children about where your family comes from? What's your question for Jamie Lee Curtis? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from Chicago is Jamie Lee Curtis, actor, author. You may know her from Halloween, her Golden Globe winning performances in True Lies, A Fish Called Wanda, Freaky Friday, and many more. She stars in Fox's Scream Queens. The second season premiered this week. She's just out with her 11th children's book, This Is Me, a story of who we are and where we came from. Jamie Lee Curtis, welcome to On Point. Great to have you here.
Good morning, Tom. Hey. Wow.
Wonderful.
There you are. It sounds like a lot.
Well, it is a lot. What? You're 57 now and you got into it early. That's a lot. You've got a big career going on. I didn't know until this book came across my desk that you've got almost a dozen children's books out there as well. Whatever led you to do that when you got the big screen up there?
You know, I was a mother of a four-year-old, and one day she marched into my office and declared that when she was little, she used to wear diapers, but now she could use a potty. And she said it haughtily, and she marched out of my office in the way that they do. And I laughed and wrote on a pad next to my desk, "When I was little, a four-year-old's memoir of her youth." Because she was talking about her past.
Yeah.
The way
at four years of age.
Right. The way I looked back at high school, which was interminable, and bell bottoms and shags and the past and the good old days.
Yeah.
And here she was talking about it, and all I saw was a child looking forward, like where was she going to go to preschool and college? And I realized in that moment, I wrote a list of things that my daughter used to not be able to do and now could do. And by the end of it, I wrote three things that made me cry. One was, when I was little, I didn't know what a family was. Mm-hmm. When I was little, I didn't know what dreams were. And when I was little, I didn't know who I was. But now I do. And I realized as I was weeping, as I wrote this list, that unbeknownst to me, a girl who barely got out of high school, that I had just written a book. And that became the first book I wrote 26 years ago.
I want to look at the book you've just written. I mean, that first one was just 1993 and many since then. I mean, including some big sellers, Today I Feel Silly and Other Moods That Make My Day.
My blockbuster.
Blockbuster, 10 weeks.
I have a blockbuster.
A blockbuster out there, a children's book. What did you mean when you said you didn't know what a family was? Why did that made you cry when the four-year-old spoke to you about what she knew? You mean because of your parents' breakup? Were you that young?
No, it had nothing to do with my parents. It had to do – I didn't know that I was part of something bigger. When you're a little child, when you're a baby, you don't know that. You're just sort of immediate needs being filled.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're four, you understand. See, I get weepy just saying this. You understand you have a family. You have a mom and a dad and you belong together. And my family is born from adoption. So it's even –
I mean your kids and your nuclear family now.
In my nuclear family,
yeah.
It's built from adoption. But
yes.
A four-year-old understands that they're part of something bigger. And it moved me because that understanding, that identity was really the beginning of these books for children which have been coined books to grow by. Mm-hmm. And now I have a book about literal identity, mm-hmm. as to who are we and where are we from.
And you've got great illustrations in here from Laura Cornell, who you've worked with a lot. And the first
I've book, only worked with her, and she's been my partner for 26 years.
Yeah, this great one. You just open the book, and there's an enormous bow of an ocean liner. And mm-hmm. it's sort of Titanic style, with a little family standing like Leonardo DiCaprio did all those years ago, mm-hmm. right out
exactly.
in the very prow, the mom and dad and a couple of kids. And then suddenly we're in a classroom, and you've got a teacher she looks Asian American, and she's talking with the very diverse, of course, these days, group of school kids. Would you mind reading for a little bit from us, just from the beginning of This Is Me?
Yeah, I love it, Tom. Thanks. Yeah. By the way, my son is Tom, so every time I say
that.
Your name, I get a tear in my eye.
All right.
I'm that person. I'm of a certain age, so I'm just going to weep a lot on national radio.
Right.
I hope you
all
guys don't mind.
We can handle it.
They brought me in a big box of tissues.
Okay, with you, we can handle it. We thought you were a hard-edged – we'll get to that. Read for us.
I'm so not hard-edged, Tom. Anyway, this teacher brings a suitcase into her classroom, and this is what she says. She says, "My great-grandmother came from a far distant place. She came on a boat with just this small case. Great-grandmother left her family and friends to cross the great sea to a land at the end. Her parents informed her she had no say. Tomorrow we leave for a place far away. So fill up this case with things you love best, and sadly, you'll have to leave all of the rest." And the teacher now explains to her students mm-hmm. this scenario of what happened to her great-grandmother. And then she looks at her students and says, "How did she do it? What would you take? Would you be scared that you'd make a mistake? And how would you know in this case what to pack, that once you had left, there'd be no coming back?" And that begins then the class project, which is she gives the case to each student mm-hmm. who then takes it home. And then you go into the classroom – into the bedroom – of each of these students,
and they're thinking,
to see what
they would take.
If they
were leaving everything, what would they take along in that little
valise? In this little suitcase. Mm-hmm. In this, you used the V word, valise. I say the V word because it's such an elegant word,
yeah.
Valise.
But
it is exactly
but
that.
But it's what it is.
Yeah. I understand. Yeah. So, for instance, I just opened it. A boy named Luke
yeah.
says this is what he would put in his suitcase. "My Groucho Marx glasses, Weird Al signed CD, my Notre Dame jersey, my karate gi." And then there's a little girl – let's see here. There's a little girl named Kate
yeah.
who would take "my punk rocker Barbie" because my mom was one too, "my barely stuffed bear, old Winnie the Pooh." And then, of course, stuff of family history and family tradition, my signed Harry Potter, my baby tooth tin, my aunt's high school class ring, my dad's Navy pin.
Yeah.
So you see it's each person would bring their own selection, which is really, quote, an object lesson in who we are in a material way.
When you were young, did you get this kind of conversation with your parents? I mean, first Tony Curtis and then Janet Leigh about their own backgrounds. Your dad, grew up in the Bronx as Bernie Schwartz?
Bernie Schwartz, yes.
I mean, did he share all that with you?
No. You know, my parents were divorced. I was very young. Mm-hmm. What happens then is this sort of split family that gets cleaved off and then new families are born. It's very much like a tree.
Yep.
You know, new roots are grown.
Common
and new,
story.
Yes, and new leaves are growing on those branches, and then that's cleaved and then another. And so I think you're just trying to keep up with the emotional impact of your life, to be mm-hmm. perfectly honest.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that family unit conversation is taking place at all. Of course, over the course of time, you learn where your parents were from, where your grandparents were from. A year and 2 years ago, my older sister Kelly and I went on a trip. And mm-hmm. we went to Hungary and we went to Denmark. We went to Budapest mm-hmm. and we went to Bornholm, which is where my mother's family was mm-hmm. from, mm-hmm. to look for – to breathe the air, mm-hmm. to eat the food, to meet the people of our ancestors. It was less about looking for a specific place that they had lived. It was about experiencing the culture that we came from. So we've been able to do that, but it was not a lesson learned in my family and therefore not one that I would necessarily know to put in my suitcase. By the way, at the end of the book, when the teacher now congratulates her students in the classroom, the teacher then looks back out to the reader because this is a book, a picture book for children with their parents or guardians or grandparents or aunts and uncles or friends or, you know, family. But today, family
can mean a lot of things.
It can be a big brother, big sister, meaning literally the organization, big brother, big sister. Anything where someone is mentoring, is caring, is listening to a child and connecting. You know, in the teacher now looks out of the book into the reader and says, what would you take in this case to basically say hi there to the world, this is me. And then you open the book and at the back of the book there's a pop-up suitcase. So even though it's very small, the suitcase, you can still put a lot of objects in it which will allow a child to walk around their room and bring you things and see if it could fit in the case. So it hopefully begins a conversation with family members, with grandparents, about who we are, where we came from, what objects mean this is me. And it's really just the beginning, I hope, of a conversation.
Did you have any idea when you set out to write this that immigrants and refugees would be so much in the headlines when it came out? I mean, after all, you've got plenty coming out of Syria who don't even get a little suitcase. They're lucky if they come out with the clothes on their back and their lives.
Exactly. No. Obviously, this was written prior to that, and it has sort of dovetailed onto a very hot-button issue, not only in the news, but in politics.
Definitely.
So maybe we'll talk about that.
I'm sure we will. Jamie Lee Curtis, it is so great to have you with us. Today from Chicago, her 11th children's book is This Is Me, A Story of Who We Are and Where We Came From. Jamie Lee Curtis, please stand by there. Listeners, you can join us this hour. What is your first memory of Jamie Lee Curtis? And how do you see her now? How would you describe the Jamie Lee Curtis appeal, her presence? Have you dipped into her now 11 children's books? And is it a good time for this theme of her latest, that we all are almost all immigrants from somewhere? I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Talking this hour with Jamie Lee Curtis, Hollywood actress, strong, smart, independent voice, and it turns out a considerable children's book author. Her latest, her 11th, is This Is Me, A Story of Who We Are and Where We Came From. You may know her from her film career, of course. It's a big one, started with those famous Screams all the way back in 1978. Scream Queen, first role, film role, big role, 1978 movie Halloween, plays Laurie Strode. In this scene, everybody remembers, Laurie discovers her friends are dead, murdered, horror film. Not many actresses get out of that role once they're really stuck in it, and she was deep in it, but she came out. 1994, True Lies, won a Golden Globe, plays Helen, legal assistant, bored with her life, considers cheating on her husband, a secret agent posing as a computer salesman. Here, her husband, played by Arnold Schwarzenegger, has interrogated her through a voice manipulator, asks her why she's contemplating sleeping with Simon. She responds,
just that there's so much I wanted to do with this life, and it's like I haven't done any of it. And the sand's running out of the hourglass, and I just wanted to be able to look back and say, see, I did that. I was reckless, and I was wild, and I did it. Quite frankly, I don't care whether you understand that or not.
Jamie Lee Curtis in True Lies. And another decade, Freaky Friday, 2003. Anna, played by Lindsay Lohan, has discovered that she's switched bodies with her mother, Tess. Jamie Lee Curtis. Looking in the mirror, Anna's shocked to see her youthful teenage self in the body of Jamie Lee Curtis.
Look at me!
I know. We seem to be inside
each other. I'm old!
I beg your pardon?
Oh, I'm like the Crypt Keeper!
Okay, that's enough.
the Crypt Keeper in 2003. Now it's 2016. Jamie Lee Curtis is with us from Chicago. Her new book is This Is Me. I'm old. I'm like a Crypt Keeper. And that was, what, more than a dozen years ago now. But you seem to be handling this aging thing pretty well. How do you think about it? How do you do it?
Well, before we mention that, I must tell you, I have a big tear rolling down my face.
Oh,
because
tell us.
Listening back to Helen, I think I represented so much of women who've been moms, who've taken care of their families and feel somehow unseen. And it just moved me listening to it again. It's funny.
The sand's running out of the hourglass.
I mean, I've literally got tears like just pouring down my face because there's a selflessness in teaching. I've just been in schools here with my new book and teachers and the amount of time. And it's really a long game. When you're a teacher or a mother, you're looking for the long game. It's not the immediate result. And I just think there's so many women who feel unseen. And, of course, in that movie, it was an exaggerated – somebody's just handed me Kleenex, by the way. I should have known better. But anyway, the only other thing I wanted to mention prior to that about then before aging is we were talking about immigration. And the thing that's really important to remember about this book – is this book is for young children who really don't know about the political situation in Syria, nor do they understand the Second World War and the exodus of the Holocaust. What the book is really intended is about that immigrant's experience, about the promise and thrill and adventure that leaving their homeland for the promise that America offered, which is really how America was built, on the promise of democracy and open economy and the idea that they could make a better life for their family. And that excitement is the is really the germ of the book. And so I just want to be careful that this doesn't become a book about fleeing your persecution, because that's a concept that is way too complicated for a kindergarten or first grader to comprehend, and it wouldn't be one I would want to introduce to them. You know, we don't teach the Holocaust to first graders. We do to third, fourth, and fifth graders because they start to read The Giver and other books that start to explore it. This is not that book. And I just wanted to say that even though the book was written prior to this big immigration – by the way, the second largest migration of human beings since the Second World War – it's still not – it's a book about excitement and adventure.
Well, yes, but you know, we all know that even that flight to opportunity had its difficulty. I mean, as you say
no
in the book, you say,
Tom,
fill up this case with the things you love best.
Sadly you'll
have
to leave
all of the rest. And that's
exactly
that's what happened with most Americans when they, wherever it was. And you know, in your book, it says, tomorrow we leave for a place far away.
Yeah.
This is, you know, it's like, hey, heads up, we're leaving
exactly.
Everything.
I'm not saying it doesn't have loss and trauma, which is any leave-taking, permanent leave-taking. I'm just saying it isn't a book about fleeing an oppressive government or political regime that is trying to kill you. That is not what the book is about. The book is about
what
can you bring to this new land that we are moving to for the promise of the new land. That's the genesis of this book is the great American dream that America offers. And nowadays, of course, we have in many cases the American nightmare of what America offers. And we're seeing it in our racial divide and we're seeing it obviously in this immigration debate politically that we're hearing on both sides, and it's very complicated.
I want to look at aging and maturing. I want to look
I'll go to aging.
Helen and True Lies. Hang on to that. We got callers for you that are right on the point of.
I apologize, Tom. I just felt
never apologize for a tear in your eye. It happens.
Oh, no, no.
It's life.
Tears.
It's life.
Snot down nose.
The whole
tissues.
Thing. Kathy in Sharon Center, Ohio. You're on with Jamie Lee Curtis. Thank you for calling, Kathy.
Oh, hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call. I listen every day and appreciate your show.
Thank you.
And Jamie Lee, I'm so honored, and now I'm crying, too. I just want to, I'm a mom and a teacher, and the two points I take from this, we had, I feel silly today, and oh my gosh, memorized is when my kids were little. The little wheel in the back was the coolest thing. But as a teacher, my point originally was that I so appreciate having a book like this and many other ones where we can use it as such a good tool in the classroom. And I know you touched on that a little bit earlier, but you know, something that we can send home and really get some critical thinking going instead of just, you know, here's the facts, regurgitate. Really teaching kids to think about things in their own lives and bringing it back to the classroom is such a blessing. I did always love to do a topic of family and also different types of families and mm-hmm. different types of situations in the home, and it's just amazing how many different ones there are, and I really appreciate it. I loved you as an actress. I love you as an author, and I'm very honored to be able to talk to you.
Thank you, Kathy.
And I'm receiving it with tears down my eyes. So
I mean, I can see a teacher asking her classroom to bring in the three things that they might, if that's all they could take, that they might take to a new land, and that would say a lot about what it's like to make that big, big shift.
Yeah.
Miguel in Newburyport, Massachusetts. Miguel, you're on the air with Jamie Lee Curtis.
Hi, Tom. Hello. Thank you, and good to meet you, Jamie.
Hi, Miguel.
It's I wanted to call in and talk about, I have a 4.5-year-old, and there's another one in the oven coming.
My congratulations.
Wife is about 11 weeks, and since we told him a couple of weeks back, Nicholas has completely changed his way, the way he sees the world, and knowing that somebody is coming into the family, just the way he's he talks to the little one, we don't know if it's a he or a she yet, but just the way every night he just hugs mom's belly, and just it sort of has opened his eyes. For almost 5 years, it's just been him and my wife and I, and now somebody else is coming. And so just to see that excitement has taught us so much that it's very, very similar to the story that we were saying at the beginning. That it's just it's a whole world, but there it comes to an age that they just realize that it's not only them.
A four-year-old figuring it out in your family right now, Miguel, with a new baby on the way.
Yes, exactly, exactly.
Wow. Beautiful.
Yeah, it is. I appreciate your call as well, Miguel. Jamie Lee Curtis, I want to back up to that tear in your eye when you listen back to Helen in True Lies, you know, who says, you know, I've just been doing the things I've been doing and the sand's running out of the hourglass, and I want to be able to look back and say, I did that. I was reckless and I was wild. I mean, even if that line in the sand, that flag that she plants, even if it's an affair, but what is that about? Is motherhood itself not enough of an I did that? Is something beyond that?
I just think it's in our culture, we just don't honor women and the role in the home, teachers. You know, I think what we've done is we've somehow said we can farm that out to someone else and go off and have these careers. And I understand, look, anybody who needs to work to support their family.
Which is most everybody these days.
Well, exactly. So, you know, maybe what I'm saying means nothing. But the truth of the matter is there's nothing more important than a child and their mother. That relationship is crucial, and I think it's not one that is particularly highlighted in our society. And so I think Helen has a teen – I mean, remember in the movie, these are fake people. Mm-hmm, but our daughter is Eliza Dushku. She was 15. She's riding off on a motorcycle with a boy. And here is Helen who feels her husband doesn't see her. And, you know, she's going for some adventure. Someone is saying, I see you and you're smart and exciting. And maybe it has to do with the function of aging. And as you brought up, you know, I've talked a lot about this, and I've tried to walk fairly true and proud in the process of aging in front of all of you, mm-hmm. And of course have gone through all of the stumbling blocks that many people do. I've tried all the plastic surgeries and injectables and all that. And I'm also sober coming up 18 years, mm-hmm. which was another way of trying to deal with my own issues of feeling inadequate. And now I no longer have that issue, one day at a time. And I am looking in the mirror and I am trying to accept and appreciate my gifts and realize that a life of service to others is really the way in. Like, if you really are feeling that, then my suggestion to anybody listening would be service. Be it volunteerism, be it volunteerism at a school, a hospital, and a home for the elderly, a homeless center. There is tremendous need for people to hold another human being's hand in the world right now and look at them and say, hi. Mm.
We've watched you do all that, and it's been really something to watch. You pulled it off with a lot of grace. Let's go to New York, Hamburg, New York. Sandy's calling. Sandy, you're on with Jamie Lee.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking this call. Mm-hmm. Jamie Lee, this is on a much lighter side.
Thank you.
You make me laugh. You make
oh,
me
good.
Laugh. I bought a movie, True Lies, years ago. My husband loves that transformation when you're going in to have that moment mm-hmm. with Arnold in the bedroom in the hotel. And I have to tell you, I laugh like a crazy person every time I see that scene when you're holding the bedpost and you're doing this real sleazy, like, pole dance. And mm-hmm. then all of a sudden, it's like you let go and you fall off camera, and I just howl at the yin and the yang of life, of every woman wanting to look that gorgeous. My husband tells me every time we watch it, oh my God, she's so gorgeous. And then the fall, which is so real to most of us out here in the real world. So I wanted to tell you how much enjoyment I get out of that scene. I just howl. Thank you so
much. Well, I have something to tell you about that.
Okay.
So, you know, she also trips walking down the hall. You know, as she's approaching the suite, she thinks she looks all that, and then she trips, which I think is an unconscious metaphor for how uncomfortable that image of what we think we're supposed to look like.
You mean
like
that super sexed up babe?
So I was going to say this sort of sexed up, hyper sexual mm-hmm. version of the woman that unfortunately is this now pervasive hyper sexed up version of women, and I'm not going to blame it on somebody with the initials K. You know who I'm talking about. But it was not my idea, and here's what I know happened. This is a comedy, and here this man has put his wife in this position of really a terrible position. Dance for me, you know, in your underwear.
Yeah.
And I can dance. Even though Jim had never seen me dance mm-hmm. and none of the crew had ever seen – there was no choreographer. So it wasn't like anybody had ever mm-hmm. seen me dance. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I picked the music and I started closing my eyes and went with it.
Yep.
And I think what happened is it got a little sexy. And I don't think – I think that Jim kind of started to go, oh, this is actually getting a little sexy. And we're going to miss the comedy because it was Jim who walked up to me after about three takes of it and whispered in my ear, I want you to let go of the bedpost. And by the way, I only did it like once or twice.
Yeah.
And I will tell you and your listeners that the single biggest laugh I will ever get in my life in anything I do is that moment.
It was pretty. It was pretty great going from your full-on sexy babe to woo. Off she goes.
But that's Jim Cameron, knowing that it's a comedy, and that somehow what was happening is it was getting a little uncomfortable, and he wanted to remember it was a comedy.
Well, Sandy and her husband loved the tension of that moment. Hey, talking about our culture sexing things up. I mean, I suppose we'd have to say you made some contribution to that. You were
pretty
buffed up and fine back in the day and right out there starting in Halloween, practically naked, you know, on the screen.
Not in Halloween, darling.
Was it?
No,
which,
no,
was
no,
it next,
Tom.
What,
in Halloween, I play the repressed virgin
girl
who couldn't get a boy and who sort of sang to herself, you know, this sort of at 17 girl. Thank you, Janice Ian, if you're listening. Thank you for that song. It saved my life in high school. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Janice Ian.
It's funny.
Please play at 17 on your radio, please.
Okay. I wish memory plays tricks. I've got lots of very leggy Jamie Lee Curtis images way back there in the file. There you were in the thick of that. Jamie Lee Curtis's new book, children's book, is This Is Me, a story of who we are and where we come from. She joins us from Chicago today. You can join us as well. What's your question for Jamie Lee Curtis on the politics of this election year, on family, family stories, immigration, refugees? I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Support for On Point with Tom Ashbrook and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage brings home financing into the 21st century with a completely online process that's fast, easy, and convenient. Using a phone or tablet, you can safely share bank statements and pay stubs without having to dig through piles of paperwork. It takes just a few minutes to get a custom mortgage solution on your terms, wherever and whenever you want. Check out Rocket Mortgage at quickenloans.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS consumeraccess.org number 3030.
We're talking this hour with actress and children's book author Jamie Lee Curtis. She's with us from Chicago. Her new book, her 11th children's book, is This Is Me, a story of who we are and where we came from. And it is all about immigration to this land. Jamie Lee Curtis, lots of films, starting all the way back in the 70s when she was the Scream Queen, and right through a long and really interesting evolution in life in the public eye. She's got a political face as well. She's out also, again, in the second season now of Fox show, Scream Queens. She plays Wallace University's dean, Kathy Munch. College is rocked by a serial killer in a Red Devil costume. She recreated her mom, Janet Leigh's infamous psycho shower scene in an episode of last season's Scream Queens with a slight twist.
I saw that movie 50 times.
That may be hard to quite grasp, but her mom didn't have it so well. Jamie Lee Curtis in Scream Queens just punches the guy out, and the knifing never happens. But she's also political. In May, she was on the campaign trail with Hillary Clinton, introduced Clinton here at a political event in Buena Park, California.
And it's about time in this country that we had a woman running this country. So I'm going to play my woman's card. I'm going to play all of our women's card. We are playing with a full deck, and we are going to welcome Hillary Rodham Clinton as the next president of the United States.
Jamie Lee Curtis in Chicago, have you been in the thick of presidential campaigns before, or is this your first time out?
This is my inaugural, excuse the pun, moment. Here's what happened. My parents, Janet and Tony, were actually quite active Democrats. They performed at the famous 1961 Snowed-In inaugural for Kennedy. Mm-hmm. My mother was a big supporter of Kennedy and Robert Kennedy. And even in the Johnson administration, she was offered an ambassadorship to Finland, which, you know, is a huge honor in politics to be offered an ambassadorship. It shows you the level of support that she had. And then she married my stepfather, and he was a Republican and a businessman, and they both became Reagan Republicans, and she really went off to the dark side politically for the rest of her life. And I, you know, I've been raising two kids. I've been married for 32 years. I've been, you know, navigating a few careers at the same time and trying to be a woman like Helen in True Lies, you know, trying to do a lot. And I have not been political, say, except for giving some money and doing my part, which is as an American, which is voting. And what happened was in January of this year, when I started to see what the stakes were, and we didn't know who the nominee was going to be on the Republican side, but I started to see the rhetoric and the conversation. And I felt like if I didn't step in, then at some point, if the Republicans won, I would feel like I didn't do my part. And so I basically ended up in Iowa being a surrogate for Hillary Clinton, going around, meeting people, talking about her programs, what she was, you know, talking about in the election, and really trying to go out and be a bit of a cheerleader for the very democratic principles that she stands for that I feel are being put into question on the Republican side.
What do you think the stakes are?
I think they're huge for this country. And I'm not even just talking about the Supreme Court decisions and the future of environmental decisions and global decisions. What I believe is that she has the experience in the public sector and the private sector that is insurmountable and feels crucial at this moment, that we need somebody who has that level experience, particularly globally, to handle the onslaught that we are facing from the threats against this country. And there's a great book that I love called Special Topics in Calamity Physics, which is a novel by Marisha Pessel. But in the body of the book, she's talking about how you assume your life is going to be about all of these criteria that you – boxes that you check about like where you go to school and blah, 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 blah. And really what she says is – what she has learned is that life hinges on a couple seconds you never see coming, and what you decide in those seconds determines everything from then on, and you won't know what you're going to do until you're there. And I feel that that is what's happening here right now. And I want the person making the decisions on my behalf as a citizen of this country to be making those decisions based on something other than some pretend wealth. I want it to be based on experience and gravitas and relationships worldwide with people so that those decisions made on my behalf are made with a mind that is – experienced.
You
and
said,
so that's why my advocacy has been so strong for Hillary Clinton.
You said in January back in Iowa, you called her the merit-based candidate in the election. And you said, you said experience will trump everything, kind of a cocky assertion that if it was Donald Trump, Hillary would whoop him. Are you so confident now?
Yes. I believe that people understand the stakes that are here. And I'm not a big poll person. I actually think polls have to do a little bit with people's egos. People get a phone call, then there's some – I think really polls feed the unseen aspect of our culture, which is the very thing that Helen feels. So if Helen received a phone call in the middle of the day and someone was saying, "Hi, is this Helen? Mm-hmm. Hey, Helen, my name is Jamie. I'm calling – you know, from the Democratic Party. Do you have a minute?" I just think it starts to fuel that in people. And I think that we can't pay attention to the polls and we need to pay attention to what we believe. And by the way, I also try not to throw tremendous shade at the other candidate because I also believe that this is a country that's a democracy. And I already understand that half the country is not happy with the way the country is being run. So I'm not so blind as to see that there are voices there that need to be heard. And I respect that because I respect America and I respect the democratic process.
Can I ask
go on.
I want to ask you about
Tom.
You talked about the unseen life. Maybe not so unseen these days. We've got a huge problem with opiate addiction in this country. And you were yourself.
Yes.
When you take your experience, and we're talking years ago now, as you say, you've been clean and sober for a long time, but you were there. You were really there. And when
right
you look, and that's way before it became so widespread as it is now, this terrible problem with opiate addiction. How do you make sense of why so many Americans are so what? Desperate, unhappy, unfulfilled, that little pill is what fills the hole in their life. How do you make sense of that?
It's a pain killer. And I think people are in pain. And I think people are in pain because they're in economic pain. They're in emotional pain. I think we're struggling as a society as to who we are and what we believe in and what we do for each other. I'm a big supporter of law enforcement and the armed services. And what we do, how we bring back our veterans, is an absolute abomination. And there's a wonderful book by Sebastian Younger called Tribe.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, Tom, if you've had
him
on the radio
show.
He's talked
with us about it. Yes, he has.
Okay. It's an extraordinary book. And what he talks about in the book is a very simple statement from his father, which is, you don't owe your country nothing. You owe your country something. And it may be your life. You just don't know it yet. And what he's talking about is the draft and the idea that the draft actually brought people of different socioeconomic, racial backgrounds together and made them a unit and had skin in the game together. And that that unity, that tribal unity, is really how you feel seen and heard. And I guess my point of bringing that up is I think people feel unseen, unheard, unacknowledged, and that's pain. And I think pain killers get drawn into the debate because you take a painkiller, you feel better.
Mm. Rock Hill, South Carolina, Chris is calling. Chris, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. I really want to say, start out by saying I love your show. Ms. Curtis, hello. It's very nice to get a chance to make a few quick points. I really, really loved you in True Lies, and those two scenes that you talked about were absolutely hilarious, and I agree with you. They will be the two scenes that will always be connected to you. But the other thing I wanted to mention is what you were talking about as far as the election and the political situation that we have going on right now. I personally am not a fan of Hillary Clinton, but my problem with her is not the fact that she's a woman. It's the fact that politicians in general treat politics like it's some kind of game. You don't get to hand down the presidency like it's a family heirloom. And there's a sense of that I feel with this election. The only thing
I hear you.
I mean, but Donald Trump, when he first announced his candidacy, I was like, well, this should be good for a laugh for a little while. But the very fact that he's made it one step away from the presidency is, I have to say, for me personally, embarrassing.
So who are you going to vote for, Chris?
I don't know. And that's the shame of it. I don't know.
And you're right. That's the shame of it. And I understand and hear you, Chris. I really do. And what I would ask you to look back on is to use the hackneyed expression now, unpack their suitcases and look at what's in them. And what you will see, like it or not, is that her suitcase is filled with a life of service to women, to children, to minorities, to the underprivileged and underserved. Her entire public life has been one of service, where his has been one of capitalism. And again, left, right, up, down, black, white, rich, poor, big, small, you still are your life's work. And I appreciate that it looks like it's a political dynasty, but I don't. I look at who she is based on her life experience of service. And the whole thing about the book Tribe that I was talking about is skin in the game. And when that Gold Star father looked out at the camera and asked Donald Trump, what has been your sacrifice? Where is your sacrifice? You have sacrificed nothing. I heard him. And again, you know, I'm not trying to disparage him, but I also want to highlight her life of service. I hear you, Chris.
Hey, a long way from politics. Can I ask you about a little thing in your personal life? Reading here. Maybe not so little. But you've been married for a long time. This is not so common in Hollywood. Christopher Guest, your husband. And I read that way back at the very beginning. I mean, we're talking, and it must have been in the mid-'80s, You saw his picture in Rolling Stone and said to your friend Deborah Hill, I'm going to marry that guy. And you did within 5 months. Is that true?
Yes.
How did that happen?
Absolutely. So honestly, I was looking through Rolling Stone. It has Cindy Lauper on the cover, if any of you have that 1984 edition.
I do not.
And there was a picture of Chris and Michael McKean and Harry Shearer standing there in their just basically shirt sleeves. And I said out loud to my friend Deborah, wow, I'm going to marry that guy. I'd never seen him before. And then you flip the page and then they're in their Spinal Tap costumes and characters.
Yeah.
And I left my number with his agent. He never called. I dated someone else. I dropped that person at the airport a few months later and went out to dinner and sat down, and two tables away was Chris. He looked at me, shrugged, kind of waved at me like, you called me and I never called you.
Mm.
A second later, he got up to leave, stood there, shrugged, waved, said, I guess I'll never call you, left, never spoke to me, left, and then he called me.
Not too promising. Okay.
He called me the next day. Yeah. We went out 2 days later, and we got married 5 months later.
That is wild. Is it true?
32 years ago.
He inherits a barony and a title. You are technically Lady Hayden Haddon Guest?
I am Lady Hayden Guest.
My goodness.
Yes.
My goodness.
I know. And can you imagine?
Living large.
My Jewish grandparents and my Danish emigre grandparents. And that their daughter is Lady Hayden Guest.
Do you use that when you make reservations at Nobu?
I do. I use it. Nice. Making reservations at Nobu. Tom, now you have some weird, exaggerated idea of my life. I do not go to Nobu. Do you know why I don't go to Nobu?
No, I don't.
Because there are paparazzi.
Oh,
you have to understand, if you see pictures of people outside restaurants, they want to have their picture taken because they've gone to the restaurant that they know the paparazzi hang out at.
Okay. So the fish are in the
simple.
Net. On purpose.
I am a private person. I do not go to restaurants where paparazzi sit out in front.
We've got so many more callers here that I'm just not going to get to from Nebraska. Corey wants to say thank you for not coloring your hair, for letting it go. You inspired
Thanks,
her
Corey.
To sort of embrace her age and run with it.
Sweet. You're sweet, Tom. You're a nice man.
Well,
can I say something before you kick me off the radio,
right at the
please?
Okay.
I know. Please let me say this.
Yeah.
I've been on a book tour.
Yeah.
I go to bookstores, I go to schools, I go to public places. And many, 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 many of the people are really interested in getting me to sign something because they like my movies. Many of them are teachers and students and who like my books. It's a mixed group. But it always feels a little weird because I do feel a little bit like a thing.
Of course.
And I must tell you that being on your show has reminded me that I'm a person and that I actually have a mind and maybe something to communicate, and I lose that when I'm a public thing where I'm waving or smiling or signing my name or taking a picture. And this has just been lovely.
Can I reassure
really
you
lovely.
That you come across a lot tougher than that, a lot tougher than that. I have no problem with the tears and the emotion, but have no
I really
fear.
Appreciate this because this has given me a lot of confidence to continue doing it.
Keep it going. We love the theme of the book. The illustrations from Laura Cornell are just terrific. And
thank you.
This valuing of what we bring, what we've all brought from abroad to this great country is something that's important. Jamie Lee Curtis, the new children's book is This Is Me, a story of who we are and where we came from. Jamie, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you. Thanks, everybody, for your support.
Jamie Lee Curtis. Listeners, you can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm on Twitter at Tom Ashbrook. NPR. This is On Point.